Hi, my name is Wendell Fitzgerald. I have been involved with a small nonprofit educational organization out of San Francisco called the Henry George School. Currently, I'm the president of the board, but I've been involved with it going on 30 plus years. And back in the 70s, when I encountered this school and took the course, a couple of courses that they offered, it was a very profound experience for me. It was about economics. It was about fundamental economics, and it was based on the, as the name of the school implies, the works of a fellow by the name of Henry George. Henry George was an American political economist and social philosopher of the 19th century. I think he was born in 1838 and died something like 1897 or 98. His works were well known at the time, and unfortunately, into the modern age, it's not very well known. Although many students of economics, people who studied as in a course of study, will have heard about it, and heard of him, and heard of his ideas. The profound impact that it had on me was that how he talked about economics actually explained to me, to my complete satisfaction, the answer to some very important questions. The main question being reflected in the title of his main book called Progress and Poverty that he wrote in 1879. He wrote this in San Francisco and it went on to become a world bestseller, actually, translated into many languages. The name of that book is called Progress and Poverty. And the question that he's asking there is, how come there's so much poverty amid so much progress? Now, in the latter part of the 19th century, there was an enormous amount of technological progress being made in what is known as the arts of production. In other words, all kinds of new machinery and technology was coming online. This was well into the Industrial Revolution. Production of all kinds of things needed that people wanted was being improved, and the idea was, gee, if we're producing more than we ever have in the past, isn't this going to have an impact on reducing poverty? And what? I mean, after all, there's more stuff, there's more food, there's more of everything possible to be produced. We're producing it faster, more efficiently, in greater abundance, but shouldn't this take care of poverty? And the answer to that was no, it didn't, and it wasn't taking care of poverty. During all of the time of the coming on of the Industrial Revolution, up to the present time, the fact that the economy in the developed world has actually solved the problem of production has not really solved the problem of poverty. And the question is, how is that possible? Why is that so? What's the mechanism that has prevented this great abundance that we now produce from being shared by everybody? And George answers this to my satisfaction. And essentially, this is why you probably don't hear about him very much, because I suppose it's controversial. What he does, what he says, and it's not his ideas. He didn't originate these ideas. He actually drew from the classical economists, Adam Smith, David Ricardo, John Stuart Mill, many of the other early economists who were the original founders of the study of economics, and they saw all of these ideas that he talked about in his works had been around, but his contribution was the way he put them together, and what he did is he really focuses on the idea of what is it that is causing the poverty amid this great progress. It's actually very simple, although it may take a bit of time to talk about it, and we don't have a lot of time here, but let me see if I can boil it down. Essentially, what he's saying is, it's very simple. Fundamental economics is about land, labor, and capital. If you've ever taken an economics course, you've heard the idea that there's three factors of production, and it's land. Everything comes from the land, all the raw resources, everything is done on top of land. So you need land in production, labor, of course, people working, and capital, which is tools. Land, labor, capital. And when all of those things are working together, what is being produced is then divided between labor and capital and land. So the laborer earns a wage. The capital is essentially, it's not money, it's tool. Capital is tools. That's what capitalism is about. It's about the increase of this technology, which is essentially just a bunch of tools, and we've just gotten more sophisticated with our tools. And that's all that's ever happened in human history. And so when you use tools, your production is more efficient. And of course, all of that takes place on land. From land, you draw it, or you know, if you're a farmer, you work on the land. If you're a miner, you're working in the land, you're drawing resources. Or if you're living, nothing takes place unless it takes place on or in land, of course. Totally necessary for production is access to land in one way or the other. When production takes place, labor gets paid wages, capital gets paid a return, which in economics is called interest. It's a term that's a little confusing because we confuse that in the modern times with interest paid on money, but in the study of economics, the return to capital is called interest. That's the reward that it earns. And then you come to land, and the return to land, whoever supplies the land, gets what is called in economics rent. It's called ground rent or land rent or rent. And the definition of rent in economics is the return to land. It's what land, you know, whoever owns the land or is providing the land gets paid. Now, a single person can be all three of these things, or they can be only one of them, or any two of them. And in modern times, it's usually labor working in a factory, not owning the tools of production, of course, and the factory sitting on the land. What George pointed out was that it turns out that whoever owns the land is getting a return that requires no work. Labor has to work to earn its reward. Capital, the tools have to be used and have to be efficient in order to earn any return. But the person providing the land, historically, you know, this has gone on for hundreds, maybe thousands of years, the landowner, the landlord, can charge a rent for which he does nothing. There's no effort involved in being a landlord per se. Now, this might be news to most people because most people consider landlords, well, you know, they're providing the house and the land. But as a landlord, if you're a renter, for example, you're renting a house, and that makes the landlord not he's not a landlord in that case, he's a capitalist. But he's also then the owner of the land. And when you pay rent, you're paying for the use of the house and also then for the use of the land. And that portion of what is paid for in rents, what we usually call rents, when you're in the case of renting a house, the rent for the land portion, that portion of what you're paying is an unearned income by the landlord, by the landowner. And it's an interesting, so the issue is what George is pointing out, that he's just reiterating from the previous economists, is that land value it's not created by labor and capital doing, you know, land is not created. Labor using tools doesn't create land. All the man-made stuff, all the human-made stuff requires human labor using tools, drawing raw resources from land. So everybody understands how a chair gets a value, how my shirt gets a value, all the man-made stuff, all the food I've eaten today, and everybody, all of these things. Labor and capital have to be employed to create their value. But where does the value of land come from? Turns out, as George is pointing out, and as all these other economists pointed out, and as all economists, even modern economists, agree, land value is created by the community as a whole. No individual landowner creates the value of the land. This is called the market value of the land upon which he lives or that he owns. Now the landowner may then be the homeowner, he may be the factory owner, he may be doing all these things, but as landowner, the return to land is determined by the community, and that means population. The increase of population increases land value, and when there's no population, you might own all the land in the valley, but it has no market value. It might be very useful, but until there are people to use it, it has no market value. So I don't want to get confused with the idea of market value and use value.